The following is an excerpt from the Science Podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
Finally today, David Grimm, online news editor of Science, is here to give us a rundown of some of the recent stories from our daily news site. So first up, we have a new use for embryonic stem cells.
Right. Carrie, this story deals with the controversial and often very struggling field of human embryonic stem cell research. And when researchers first started working with stem cells, they were very excited because especially embryonic stem cells can theoretically differentiate into any type of cell in the body. So researchers thought that by working with embryonic stem cells, they could turn it into something maybe like an insulin-producing cell, put it into somebody who has diabetes, and all of a sudden they'd be cured of diabetes. Well, things haven't really turned out that way. First of all, these cells have proven a lot harder to work with than scientists originally thought. Also, there's been a lot of controversy in the field because some people don't like the idea that these cells are often derived from human embryos. What's special about this new study is it's actually the first published results from a clinical trial using human embryonic stem cells. And so it's a real important milestone for the field. It's showing that not only can these cells be used, but they can also be somewhat effective.
And so these in particular were used in treating eye disease. Which diseases are we talking about?
Well, the trial was very small. It was only two patients. And one of them was a woman in her 50s who had macular degeneration. And this is a degeneration of your vision that can occur as you grow older. Another one had a rare inherited disease that was causing her to be almost blind. And what the researchers did was they took human embryonic stem cells, and they made them turn into what are called retinal pigment epithelium cells. And these are cells that help us see. And they basically just injected these cells into the eyes of the two patients and monitored their progress over the course of several weeks. And one of the really important things they found was that the patients didn't seem to have any adverse side effects. Now, when researchers have used human embryonic stem cells in other animal models, these cells have sometimes turned into tumors, abnormal growths, caused other problems. But the researchers didn't see any of that in the two patients. And what was also really interesting was the researchers actually saw an improvement of vision in both patients. Now, it wasn't a dramatic improvement in vision, but for example, one of the women could only see hand movements before she got the treatment. And a few weeks after she got the treatment, she was actually able to read a few letters on an eye chart. So it wasn't like her vision was magically restored, but it certainly seemed to get better.
Well, the researchers in this study seem very cautious about the results here. Why are they not glowingly excited about this?
Well, first of all, it's a very small trial, only two patients, so it's hard to make big conclusions over such a small trial. Also, the field has just been plagued with so many problems that they don't want to get overexcited. They really want to do a lot more work, a lot more safety work has to be done. And also, you know, again, this wasn't a dramatic improvement in vision, so there may be better ways to do this treatment. Maybe the researchers can find a better way of actually getting the cells into the eye, or other ways just sort of improve how therapy like this would work.
All right. And next, this is your brain on drugs.
Right. This is your brain on psychedelic drugs specifically. And the drugs we're talking about here are magic mushrooms. And the active ingredient in these magic mushrooms is a drug called psilocybin. And for anybody who's taken magic mushrooms, I can't speak from personal experience, but you know, these types of drugs cause very hallucinogenic experiences, out-of-body experiences, sometimes very religious experiences people have when they're on these drugs. And this new study is trying to figure out, why does all of this happen? What is happening in people's brains when they take these drugs?
So how do they tackle that?
Well, surprisingly, they didn't actually give people magic mushrooms. They wanted the effect to be very short and very quick. And so what they did was they actually took psilocybin and they injected it intravenously into a few patients that were sitting in an fMRI scanner. An fMRI is basically a machine that measures activity in the brain. And so what the researchers did was they gave the drugs and they looked at the brain activity of these patients. And what was really surprising, what they found, is a lot of researchers had speculated that magic mushrooms or psilocybin overstimulated the brain so that, you know, all the experiences we usually had were just much more intense than usual. But they found the opposite. They found that psilocybin actually seems to shut off certain parts of the brain, specifically activity to the posterior cingulate cortex and the medial prefrontal cortex. Now, both these regions are involved in what's called the default mode network of the brain. This is a region that's involved when our minds wander. They're also thought to be involved in generating our sense of consciousness and just sort of who we are and our surroundings. So you can imagine if you start turning our sense of consciousness off, then your brain will perhaps start to invent curious realities, which is sort of what a lot of people experience when they take these drugs.
So what does this all say about the potential therapeutic use of these hallucinogenic chemicals?
Well, it's a great question because these drugs aren't just taken recreationally. Scientists really want to try to use them therapeutically. And there's been suggestions that they could be used to treat people with several types of mental illness, including depression and anxiety. Scientists are also very interested in figuring out the neural basis of spirituality. Why are some people much more religious than others? And because a lot of people have religious experiences while taking these types of drugs, these drugs could really shed light on what's going on in our brain when we have these types of experiences. So now that they know a little bit more about how these drugs work, they may be a bit closer to answering those questions.
Wow, how interesting. And our third story today sounds a little bit like the title of a Philip K. Dick novel.
Right. We titled it, Do Dolphins Speak Whale in Their Sleep? And it's also maybe the title of a bit of a hallucinogenic experience, if you want to call back to the last item we talked about. But basically, this is a very curious finding from a marine park in France. And what researchers found was that a bunch of dolphins in this marine park were making strange noises in the middle of the night. They had put these underwater microphones in the water to just sort of listen to what the dolphins were doing at night. And this is what they heard.
All right, so that's an interesting noise. To my human ears, I wouldn't know that that isn't normal, but what do scientists think that that sounds like?
Well, what the researchers thought was, you know, this sounds a lot like whale noises, but they didn't trust their own ears. So what they did was they ran these noises through a computer program that compared them to a variety of other sounds, and the computer program essentially spit out that indeed these sounds were very similar to whale sounds.
And they say that this isn't just any whale song, but it's actually something that the dolphins had already heard earlier that day.
Right. The dolphins aren't just making up whale sounds. When they have their performances during the day, the marine park actually blares this soundtrack that includes music, seagulls' calls, and humpback whale calls. And so the dolphins are actually hearing these sounds during the day, even though they're not coming from actual whales, they're coming from this soundtrack. And they seem to be repeating them at night.
So the significance here isn't just that it's whale noises that they're purportedly singing, but also that they're actually remembering sounds that they had heard earlier in time?
Exactly. Dolphins have been shown before to mimic whale noises, so that's not new. What's new is that they're mimicking them so much later in the day. It's almost like they're trying to process them or they're trying to remember them. What's also interesting is that the whale sounds are being played during a sort of a learning part of the dolphin's day. They're learning new tricks. They're performing new tricks. And so they may be sort of incorporating this into their repertoire. Hey, that's something else I've got to learn. That's something I've got to study. And so at night when either they're sleeping or they're just sort of hanging out, they're repeating these sounds as a way to maybe encode new memories.
Well, so it sounds like this noise sounds a whole lot like the whale song that they hear earlier, but are we 100% positive that that's really what this is?
We're not 100% positive, and actually neither are the researchers. Even after they ran the computer program, they actually asked 20 human volunteers to see whether they thought these were whale sounds. And about 76% of the time, the volunteers classified the imitations as sounds from real whales. So even to our own ears, it sounds like whales, but still, that's not enough. In fact, one expert quoted in the study says that he's heard a lot of sounds that dolphins make in the wild that sound like they might be coming from whales, but they're actually not. So this is still sort of an open question about what these dolphins are actually speaking at night, whether they're speaking whale or maybe just speaking some other form of dolphinese.
All right. So what else have we had online this week?
Well, Carrie, for Science Now, we've got a story about jumping spiders. Also a story about the North Star and whether it might be wasting away. For Science Insider, our policy blog, we've got a story about a researcher accusing scientists of misconduct over YouTube. We're also continuing our coverage of the controversial avian flu papers. There's a lot of controversy about two recent papers, whether they should be published in their entirety, and what are the implications for biosecurity. So be sure to check that out on Science Insider. And finally, for Science Live, our weekly chat on the hottest topics in science, this week's chat is about the science of anti-aging. What are scientists learning about how to keep our bodies younger? And next week's chat is about peak oil. Is the well starting to run dry for the global oil supply? So be sure to check out all of these stories on the site.
I certainly will. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Carrie.
David Grimm is the online news editor for Science. You can check out the latest news and the policy blog, Science Insider, at news.sciencemag.org, where you can also join a live chat, Science Live, on the hottest science topics every Thursday at 3 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time.